In 1956, freshman women living in the dorms at Iowa State College had to be home by 8:45 p.m. weeknights during the fall and winter quarters. By spring, they had earned the privilege of staying out until 10. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, curfews, dress codes, and chaperones, then and now. I'll talk with Gracia Willis. She'll give us a firsthand account of living in the dorms at Iowa State College in the 50s. We'll get more on college life from Maggie Van Ohl, retired director of the residence halls at the University of Iowa, and David McCartney, a university archivist at the U of I. And Sarah Richardson is a retired high school English teacher and longtime chaperone. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. For many decades, curfews, dress codes, and chaperones were a fact of life for college students, particularly for women. We asked some present-day University of Iowa students how they would respond to a 10 p.m. curfew.
By 10 o'clock p.m., I don't live in the dorms.
I would think it was unnecessary.
Probably wouldn't be too happy.
I am very thankful that that is not the situation that I had to live in.
I would think that'd be a little extreme.
I would not be happy with that because I think a really important part of college is becoming an independent adult. And a lot of that is making dumb decisions and figuring out that you should be asleep before 4 a.m.
That's kind of an invasion of privacy. And I don't think I'd be okay with that.
We had assistance from Iowa Public Radio's Amy Mayer and Julia Davis in talking to those students. Now, of course, curfews for co-eds were the law of the land for a long time. This hour, we'll do some reminiscing. We'll also talk about how times have changed. And we want to hear from you. What were the rules that were most difficult for you to follow? Did you find yourself on social probation? Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And to start us off, Gracia Willis is with us on the line from Rockwell City. She went to Iowa State College back when it was Iowa State College from 1955 to 1959 and studied home economics. Hello, Gracia.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, it's fun to reminisce.
So when you were a freshman living in the dormitories, what were some of the basic rules that you had to follow?
Well, first of all, it was required for all freshman women to live in a freshman dormitory or else at home. And there were rules on almost every aspect of our life. And I suppose the one that bothered us the most was that the house mother sat with her book where she could see the front door. And if we were going to be out after 6 o'clock, we had to sign that book and say where we were going and about when we would be back. And freshman women had to be in by 8:45, Monday through Thursday. And Friday night was midnight, Saturday night was 12:30, and Sunday night was 10:30.
All right, so you had a little more freedom on the weekends. But on those weeknights, not only did you have to be back by 8:45, you had lights out at 11 o'clock, right?
Exactly. And there were other restrictions. In those days, we groups of 12 to 15 ladies shared a telephone, and the telephone was not allowed to be used during study time at night. I think there was maybe just the time from 10 till 10:30 we could use the phone.
Did you also have dress codes?
We certainly did. There were prescribed kinds of clothes for us to wear to class. And we could not wear slacks in the public areas of the dormitory, except maybe there might have been one little exception for some time. But
so you couldn't wear slacks. You couldn't wear slacks to class ever, right?
Well, I think that's true. We never did. We were told what exactly to wear as far as dresses and skirts and sweaters. Casual sports dress. They suggested a jumper with fresh blouses. But different clothes for different social occasions. Okay.
Well, you know, I walked that campus in many winters, and I can't imagine having to wear a skirt in January on Iowa State's big campus, walking across Central Campus with the wind. What were the hardest rules for you?
Well, let me see. I think that some of the study things, we had to be in our rooms, of course, and certain times of night we could not use the typewriter because it was too loud, so we'd have to take the typewriter some other place. There are three of us in the room, and so that's kind of crowded. And I was the only child growing up on the farm, so being this close to so many women was certainly a little different for me.
Did you ever run afoul of the rules? Do you remember?
No, I was the good guy. I turned out to be a group leader called an advisor my sophomore year, and then I was president of the freshman dormitory my junior year. So I had to enforce them.
Okay, and was that hard? Were there a lot of people breaking rules, or was this just something that most of the young women accepted?
Well, we were the silent generation, and most of the women accepted the rules that this was what is happening, and, you know, we have to go by these rules or we'll get kicked out. And, of course, the eating situation was very different in those days, too. Do you want to hear some of those things?
Yeah.
Well, we were required to eat in the dormitory, and every week we would be assigned to a different table of eight people, and there would be a hostess, and she would be the only person that could talk to the waiter. And in fact, in our dormitory, if a waiter was caught dating someone from that dormitory, they were fired.
Oh, my.
But the hostess could only talk to the waiter and only about the food kinds of things. And there were rigid rules about who dished up what food and which way the plates were passed around and with what hand you were using. And at breakfast and at lunch, we could leave when we were finished. But for the evening meal, which was called dinner, we had to wait until the house mother finished, and then we all exited at the same time. And on Sundays, I believe we were required to wear hose and heels to eat and all wait for the house mother to go into the dormitory dining room first.
So if you didn't do those things, what happened to you?
Well, I'm not sure. I think the house mother would probably give a reprimand for something. But if someone was late coming in too many times, this person had to come before the house mother and the officers of the dorm to explain their behavior. And I think if something was really bad, they were campused, which means that they couldn't leave the dormitory for the whole weekend.
Mm. Not even to go home?
I don't think so. Not if they'd been bad. But I don't remember that happening very much.
Oh. And even to go home, you did have to get permission, right?
You did. And one of my friends said that she went home with a permission slip and forgot to have her parents sign it. So she was really quite worried. And she talked to the house mother when she got back, and she said, oh, that's all right, mail it and have them mail it back. But this friend was so concerned, she called her parents to say, be sure to send it back right away. And the father said, I can't believe it. You said you were home, and you were, and they're requiring a signed paper.
So her father was chafing at the rules.
Yes, he was.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Gracia, thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us today.
You're welcome. It's been very fun.
Gracia Willis was with us on the line from Rockwell City. She went to Iowa State College from 1955 to 1959, went on to teach home economics for many, many years. And my next guests were not quite as well-behaved when they were in college, I've heard. With me now, Maggie Van Ol, retired director of the University of Iowa Residence Halls. Hello, Maggie.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, you're very welcome.
I also have with me Sarah Richardson. She's a retired high school English teacher. She attended college in Colorado and California in the 1960s. Hello, Sarah.
Hi.
Thank you for being here today. And David McCartney, a university archivist at the University of Iowa Libraries, and he went to college during the 1970s at Iowa State University and then in Madison, Wisconsin as well. Hello, David.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And Maggie, before we get into your experience as the director of the residence halls, and I know you held many positions in the residence halls over the years, let's talk about living in the dorms in the 1960s. So we were just focusing on the 50s. How had things changed by the early 1960s?
Well, when I first graduated from high school, I was just barely 17, and my folks didn't want to send me away to an art school, which is where I wanted to go. They sent me to Central College in Pella, Iowa, which is a very straight-laced community, should I say, a nice community, that I didn't follow the rules very well. I mean, I, you know, did a little drinking, did a little leaving the residence halls when I wasn't supposed to. We also had to attend, I had to dress up all the time, which really was not fun for me. I didn't like that. We had to dress up to go to meals. We had to dress up to go to chapel every morning, and it was hard. I ran into a group of people and got to know them pretty well, and, you know, we did a little. I learned how to play bridge. I learned how to play pool. I learned how to drink. I learned how to do a lot of things in college.
So do you think that there had already been a little bit of a cultural shift from the 1950s where maybe, although there were rules, maybe there was a little less respect for the rules?
Well, maybe I think it was just there's you. I think it could have been just me. I don't know. But I think probably it was eroding a little bit, but not much. I mean, I think I was not a typical student. I think I was more fun than a lot of others.
What were the rules that were hardest for you to follow?
Oh, that coming in at a certain hour at night, you know, you're just having fun somewhere, and then you have to either call in and tell them where you are, or you have to get home. And I had been campused a couple times, so I know what that means. That means you don't get to go anywhere, talk to anybody. You can't even talk to your roommate.
It's like getting grounded.
Yeah. Well, plus you can't talk to anybody, which is, you know.
You couldn't.
No, I couldn't even talk to my roommate. That's what it meant to be campused. So
solitary confinement.
Yeah, pretty much, only they didn't have the room to put us in a separate room. So, and it didn't bother me too much, but, you know, because I just figured, well, you know, pay my dues and go off and do something more fun later on. So,
all right. Well, we're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. We're going to take a short break. This hour, we're talking about curfews, dress codes, chaperones, and how times have changed over the decades. We'd love to hear your stories this hour as well. With me, Maggie Van Ol, retired director of the University of Iowa Residence Halls, David McCartney, University Archivist at the University of Iowa Libraries, and Sarah Richardson, a retired high school English teacher. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about curfews, dress codes, chaperones, and how things have changed over the decades. We're focusing primarily on college life today. And of course, we'd love to hear your stories as well. What were the rules that were difficult for you to follow? Did you get campused? Do you have some stories to share? 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Maggie Van Ol is here today. She's retired director of the University of Iowa Residence Halls. David McCartney is here, university archivist at the University of Iowa Libraries and also attended college in the 70s. Sarah Richardson is here. She's a retired high school English teacher and went to college in Colorado and California in the 1960s. And we were talking about the early 1960s with Maggie a little while ago. Sarah, you went to college a little later on in the late 1960s, and things had changed a lot by then, right?
Yes, we were heavily into the Vietnam War and bombing Cambodia, and that was first and foremost on campuses, all the kids, their minds, and so school was sort of last on the list for me.
But there were still rules in the dormitories.
There were rules. When I went to college in California, it was an all-women's school, And it was beautiful. I actually went there because I thought it would be cool to go to California. Didn't really care that it was maybe a very good academic school. It just would be cool to be in California. And we had dorms that were managed by house mothers. And again, like Maggie, we had to sign in, sign out. I think our curfew was 11, and no young man was allowed beyond the opening of the door. And the thing that I thought, looking back, I think was so funny is that there was a back stairway, and it was much more worn than that front stairway because we all figured out how to break that rule immediately.
Do you think enforcement was a little different then?
You know, I think enforcement was a way for someone to get hired in a position like that, to do what she needed to do, but it didn't seem to get done often. I went to school at a very tumultuous time in our society. And so I spent a lot of time down in Candlestick Park in San Francisco and those areas in Haight-Ashbury listening to concerts, and was always late, always late. And I never got in trouble. I got reprimanded, but I never had any consequences. I don't think they knew what to do because I was like everybody else. I wasn't.
There were too many rule
unique.
Breakers to right. to work on that. Well, and of course, you know, with all of these rules, somebody had to write all of those rules down. And David, in the archive, you have a lot of these rule books from the University of Iowa.
We do. We have a set of documents that I think the name had changed various times over the years, but going back as early as 1919, the University of Iowa archives has documentation of policies regarding student conduct, what will and will not be tolerated on campus. And I brought a few examples along. One, for example, is a publication called The Blue Book. This was published for a number of years by the University Women's Association, which was a group of residence hall affiliated women here at the University of Iowa. And they published this as a set of regulations for undergraduate women. And I'm holding up a copy of the 1948-49 edition. And this confirms everything that your guests have described so well. In 1948, the closing hours for women's residences at the U of I, Sunday through Thursday, 10:30 p.m., 12:30 a.m. on Friday and Saturday nights, and there were allowances for class recess if you obtained permission in advance. Local overnight guests are permitted in dormitories or houses only on Friday and Saturday nights and the night preceding a university holiday with special permission only. And you had to obtain that permission from your dormitory head counselor or house mother or some similar authority.
And presumably those were guests of the same gender.
Yes. Yeah. We would assume
which,
that.
Which went without saying. It mm-hmm. was so obvious, right?
Right.
So at the same time that the women had all of these rules, what were the rules in men's dormitories like?
Well, comparable, but quite frankly, not
okay,
as...
wait. Maggie is shaking okay. her head no.
Okay, well...
Weigh in on that, Maggie.
We have rules and we have practice, right?
No, yes, they may have had rules, but I never saw any mm-hmm. kind of practice at all when I first came here. So
there was a very real gender inequity in the enforcement.
Yes, and, yes, which and made it, us real mad.
Mm-hmm. And rightly so. There was this, I think, double standard that pertained specifically to Currier Hall, which until the early 1970s was all women at the University of Iowa. At Iowa State, probably a similar situation. And in looking through the policy guides, I am definitely struck by the fact that these rules very specifically pertain to women's behavior, but not so much men's. I mean, on paper, there would be this a sense of equity, I suppose, but in practice, unfortunately, it was a very different thing.
Now, of course, men and women have always liked to get together. So what were the visiting policies like if a gentleman caller wanted to come to the women's dormitory?
Well, in 1955, for example, and I'm again referring to the Code of Student Life, referring to chaperones and hours of entertainment, no women guests may enter or remain in men's residences except when authorized chaperones are present. And then only at times within the following schedule. And you have a 6-hour, 15-minute window Monday through Thursday, 4 until 10, 15 p.m. Fridays, they opened it up a bit. You could stay until 15 minutes past midnight. Saturday, a 12-hour window. And I see Maggie doing the Yahoo.
Right.
So yes, there were definitely rules of governance.
Well, and when gentlemen did come to call, they weren't allowed in the women's rooms, right? There was
a common area, a lounge, perhaps, or Maggie, you can confirm that for me.
Well,
I think it was
when I went to Pella, to Central College. Yes, there was one lounge that you could all come down and talk, and that was, and even in Burge, that was all women too until sometime in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, everything on the East Campus was women, and everything on the West Campus was men. And
separated by a river.
Yes, which really wasn't a very good separation.
But they shouldn't have put those bridges
that's right,
over
that's
it.
That's right. They shouldn't have done that. But the same thing, you could all meet in the lobby, but you couldn't go upstairs. Now, as time progressed, you could go upstairs for a very limited period of time, but you had to have the door open. You couldn't have your room door shut. So I saw that change come down the road.
Well, and even there, I've heard about rules about how close people could sit together in the common area as well.
I have to comment on Maggie's observation about how the men and women were separated by the river. I was an undergraduate at Iowa State, and it was a few years after dorms went co-ed. I was an undergrad there in the mid-1970s, but I was always impressed by the fact that the president's home at Iowa State sits on this hill. In fact, it's called the Knoll, and it was exactly halfway between Friley Hall, the men's residence hall, and the Richardson Court, where the women resided. And the president and his wife lived right in the middle.
You had to walk past the president's house.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think it's interesting that you mentioned when dorms went co-ed. My children graduated from a small liberal arts college in New York in the 90s, and they had quads, with boys and girls living together, sharing the same bathrooms. I think all of this that we're talking about obviously didn't work. And so somebody got smart and said, if we're going to continue to operate this way, we're going to lose students and they're going to go somewhere where they can actually breathe and be left alone and to make good decisions, hopefully.
Maggie?
I think some of the changes occurred just because, I don't remember who said it, but there were so many that broke the rules that you couldn't punish everybody. So it got lighter and lighter and lighter and lighter as time went by, the rules. And then people didn't really do too much about them. That swung really back to the right at some point at the University of Iowa, but then it swung to the left again. So, I mean, it was interesting to live through that. So, I mean, at one point, when students first were able to drink and at an early age, I mean, they were all allowed because it was legal to do it in the hallways. And so it was terrible. I mean, there were all kinds of not fights, but parties, and people complained about the noise. It was so anyway, when everybody does it, you change the rules.
Right. We're talking this hour about rules for college students in Iowa, how rules changed over time with curfews and dress codes and chaperoning. We'd love to hear your stories this hour as well at 866-780-9100. Ruth is on the line in Mount Vernon. Hi, Ruth.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I was just chuckling listening to this. I went to Cornell College and in the 60s, 62 to 66, and I think maybe all the dean of women from all these schools, state schools or private schools, went to the same conference because the rules sound pretty similar across the board for that era, and I experienced some of the same things. But I did notice a great change in the 4 years that I was there from 9:15 hours, my freshman year during the first quarter to senior year living in a senior women's dorm we could check out our own key if we were going to be out past hours. So there was a lot of change in dress code and hours and many other things during that 4-year period. But very similar experience. And later on, I went back to Cornell and worked in the administration and advised one of the, actually the same local sorority that I'd been a member of, and the girls were shocked when I could tell them some of the stories about the 50s and the 60s and the rules. They didn't understand why that would even be possible. So that was a very similar experience that I remember.
Well, and when you were in school, Ruth, do you feel like there were different rules for the sororities as opposed to the dormitories, or were they very, very similar?
No, really, our sororities at Cornell are local sororities. There were no sorority houses. We lived in the dorms. So the rules were not different for sororities as the general general population of women. We did have hours, and you did get campused. I remember having that happen once. If you accumulated so many late minutes, and I noticed a lot of the late minutes were accumulated right outside the door when women would say goodnight to their boyfriends, and they'd have to be in, and the proctor who was monitoring it would keep knocking on the window and come on in, and if you missed it 2 minutes, that kept accumulating, and eventually if you had 15 late minutes, then you had to stay in the dorm on a Saturday night. I do remember, though, I told the young women when I was their advisor that one of the benefits I found of ours was that many times on a weekend you'd come home from a date, either it saved you from a bad date that you could get home, and second of all, we all came in at the same time, and then all the women gathered together in rooms, and it was great camaraderie. We had a wonderful time, and as we get together, I have a reunion coming up with those women this summer. We talk about that and what great time we had in the dorm after we were in at hours. Now they come in all different hours, so it's a different experience, but I don't consider it to be a bad one.
Right, but so there was maybe more of a community feeling, more of a togetherness.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But dress codes all changed within that time. We could not wear slacks to class unless it was below 15 degrees. Cornell sits on a hill.
Very reasonable.
And if it's 15 degrees that was posted, you could wear slacks to class. By the time I was a senior, that had been changed. We could not wear jeans on campus at all. And then by my senior year, we could wear jeans. So certainly women today would not appreciate or accept. But we were questioning. We were starting to question. I remember questioning the dean of women at Cornell with a group of friends saying, why do we have 9:15 hours the first quarter and not the men? And she said, well, we want you to have really, strong grades that first quarter.
So we don't care about men's grades, right?
We asked for the statistics. What are the statistics that show the first quarter grades of women are, below the men's? And if that's the case, why don't, of course, their theory was that they didn't express. I think they believed that the women were in the dorms by 9:15, the men would go to the dorm too. But women were asserting themselves, and that has just continued, and it rightfully so. So I've enjoyed this conversation today.
Well, Ruth, thank you so much for your call, and you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. And David, I know that you followed pretty closely when the dorms were integrated because your father was on the Board of Regents in Iowa during that time.
That's correct, Charity. My dad was appointed to the board in 1970. He had just completed two terms in the Iowa House, in the Iowa legislature. He was elected first in 1966 and again in 68. In 1970, he decided not to run again because the opportunity came up for an appointment to the State Board of Regents. So Governor Robert Ray appointed him. Dad served from 1970 to 1972. Which was a pretty tumultuous period to be mm-hmm. serving on the state's highest Board of Education. And this issue came up. I don't remember the date. I tried researching this before I came in today to see exactly what the date was when the Iowa State Board of Regents approved allowing co-ed residency in the dormitories at the three region institutions. I couldn't find the date, but it was around 1970 or 1971. And the reason I remember this is I was about 14 or 15 at the time when the vote came up, and my dad was in the minority. He voted against co-ed dorms. And I didn't really follow the issue that closely at the time, except maybe just enough to, as a 14-year-old would do, kind of roll his eyes in reaction to my dad's position. But it was a very sincerely held position. And I do remember that dad received a letter of commendation from the mayor of our hometown of Charles City. Leo Shula was mayor of our town at the time. And he took the time to write a letter to dad commending him for his vote, saying that it was, that the phrase that Mayor Shula used was, your adhering to the basics of our civilization. I'll never forget that phrase.
Wow.
It was a very kind letter, actually, although I personally disagreed with his position. I thought it was a really wonderful expression to Dad.
So when the dormitories were integrated, when they became co-ed, Maggie, is that a time that you remember?
Oh, sure. I remember it because I was working in the residence halls at that point. And
was the controversy huge?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't big at that point because it was a little further down the road than what you said. And I thought it was in, 79 or 78.
It may have taken time, I think, to implement. And okay. I think each campus probably over time did it in different stages.
But one of the reasons why this university, University of Iowa, tried it or did it was because basically they wanted to try and find a way to calm the men down because they were just, you know, they would tear the residence halls apart every day. I mean, every night, every weekend. So they started integrating men into the women's floors, and it seemed to work out.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about curfews, dress codes, chaperones, college life in Iowa over the decades. With me today, I have Maggie Van Ol, retired director of the University of Iowa Residence Halls, David McCartney, university archivist with the University of Iowa Libraries, and Sarah Richardson, a retired high school English teacher. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about college life in the dormitories, how it's changed over the years, how rules have changed, curfews and chaperones and many stories. This hour, we'd love to hear from you at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Sarah Richardson. She's a retired high school English teacher, and she attended college in Colorado and California in the late 60s. David McCartney is here, university archivist at the University of Iowa Libraries, and he went to school in Iowa and Wisconsin in the 1970s. Maggie Van Ol is here. She's a retired director of the University of Iowa Residence Halls and had college experience in the 60s, but really forever, because once you moved into the dormitory, you continued to remain involved with residence halls and dormitory life for a very long time. We also want to hear from you, and Ken is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Ken.
Yes.
Hi, what's your story?
I'm a graduate. Can you hear me all right? I'm turning the radio down.
Yes, we can.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Ken?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. I'm a graduate of St. Ambrose College in Davenport, Iowa, which right now is the second largest university in Iowa behind Drake. But anyway, I was 1960 to 64. I graduated then, and it was an all-men's school, and there was really a lot of hours that we had to abide by. An example I like to give is that in the morning, you had to be out of the dormitory by 7:30 in the morning, and it was a proctor that checked each room. Two guys to a room. The only thing that was open was the chapel. Being a Catholic university, a Catholic college, Elementary College, the chow hall was not open till 8, so you didn't have much choice. But the requirement was you had to be out of the dorm at 7:30.
All right, so that was a way to make sure that you went to chapel.
Yeah, and then at night, we made sure we studied, so we had to be in at 7, checked at 7. Also at 10 and at midnight. And I was a proctor the last 2 years, so my job was to enforce it. Anybody found in violation was fined 50 cents, and they had to go meet with the dean of men. He's a priest, toughest guy in eastern Iowa, I can assure you. And you had to meet with him. And the thing that we thought was kind of interesting, some mornings, we were given orders by the dean of men to do closet checks. So when you check in the morning, be sure they're out of bed. You had to check the closets because the guys would jump out of bed, hide in the closet.
Oh, my goodness.
And we had some great stories. It's one of my best friends. He was a couple years behind me. And And I remember opening the door in the closet, and he was buck naked in there hiding. But anyway, and that was nothing compared to what Marycrest College, which is the girls' college across town, what they had to go through. But anyway, that's kind of my story.
All right, Ken. Well, thank you so much for sharing. And, of course, private colleges had a different set of rules and could have a different set of rules. In fact, still do. Jesse is on the line from Lamoni. Hi, Jesse.
Good morning.
And you went to Graceland University?
I did. I was at Graceland from 2002 to 2007 and lived on campus 2002-2003 school year in the 03-04 academic year.
And there are still curfews, or there were for you at least, in place then, right?
Right. And it's really it's going to sound lax to folks that were in school in the 60s and even the 70s, but for us, we had to be men and women both. We don't have co-ed residence facilities, but we had to be out of the women's halls during the week at midnight and then at 2 a.m. Friday, Saturday. And even to check in with your student ID and check out with it, if you would forget your ID, as I did a time or two, you'd get a fine of sorts. And so I remember one Wednesday night, went to the movie, and when I came back with the friend of mine to drop her off at the facility, I found that I'd forgotten my ID, and that 5 or 10 minute latency, cost me $10 or $15.
So there were monetary fines.
Yes,
in place,
and there still are to this day.
All right, so that's the 2000s way of campusing you, is to charge you.
Yes, they think that money talks to students.
Well, I think that's probably true.
Yes, I think it does.
It was probably a pretty big incentive, wasn't it, Jesse?
It was. It only happened once.
All right. Well, Jesse, thank you so much for calling and sharing that with us. And of course, you went to Central in Pella, Maggie. And so in the culture, I would guess even then at Central was probably more restrictive than at the state universities.
I would guess so, yes.
And we have this tweet. This is from JamV, who said, I went to Central College in the early 2000s. I lived in the all-girl dorm, and it was still a big deal when a guy was on the floor.
Huh. That's sad.
Well, in your opinion.
Yeah. True.
But as you were working in the residence halls, I mean, how did you see visitation rules changing over time for people of the opposite gender?
Well, and I can't quite remember when all of this sort of took place, and it took place in some ways slowly and in some ways overnight. But students could have members of the opposite sex in their room unless it bothered, because there was no visitation at some point, and they used to have closed visitation, which means no men were allowed on women's floors at all. And there was limited visitation, and then open visitation. So men could be up there on the hall, but they had to leave at a certain hour unless the roommate didn't complain, tell you the truth. So, but we would get complaints from roommates, and then we would have to take some kind of action. So even the bathtub rooms on the halls in Burge Hall became, I think, canoodling-ness, because you'd go walk down the hall and you could hear through the vents all of this giggling and carrying on. So you'd have to go deal with that. It was a little embarrassing to knock on the door, though, and say, you have to leave.
No more canoodling.
Yeah, no more canoodling. Let's shape up.
But mostly, did you find yourself responding to particular complaints?
Yes, that's what we would. Because it got to the point where if nobody's complaining, then, that's up to you. But if a roommate complains, if anybody complains, then we're taking action, because you're here to get an education. And we know that if you don't complain, first of all, it's a really good way to teach people to be assertive, because eventually they would complain, and then they would learn how to say no to, roommates and boyfriends and whoever else. So it really was good for that. But, people were just working against you if you didn't just act on those complaints.
Well, as you observed all of these changes over the years, I know you had to deal with what at one time was a time-honored tradition among college men, which was the panty raid.
Yes, and see, we knew when they were coming for a long time because the residence halls on the West Campus, which were all men, took a long time to get across campus, those bridges, and to come up to the residence halls, the women's residence halls. So we knew they were coming for a long ways, but someone would always get to a door that wasn't being watched by a staff person. Even a staff person let them in once. And, of course, then they run up and down the halls, and they're running in and out of rooms and grabbing people's underwear and, you know, just having a good time.
You'd have to buy new underwear.
I know. See, that would be my problem. I wouldn't want to.
So do you feel, I understand that Sarah and Maggie, both of you chafed against the rules that you had to live under, but we have some very serious problems on college campuses today. Do you feel like college women were safer in your time?
Oh, not necessarily. I think because what would happen is that they would leave the residence hall. They'd sneak out of the residence halls and spend the night because you didn't get caught if you weren't there. If you didn't come back late, nobody knew any different. So I sort of think that really didn't have much to do with that. I mean, it doesn't change that much.
I think withholding information about life and growing up and being on your own and being independent and I'm away from home and I'm having a college experience, whatever that may mean to whatever, whomever, is so much more important. It may be dangerous on campuses now, but at least parents and universities and small private colleges even are trying to inform young women and young men, this is really dangerous behavior or this is okay. Make good decisions. And I think as parents, we try to do the same thing. When you withhold information from young people and you act like they're too young to understand, I think that's a disservice to kids. And I felt that way in high school, too.
We have this email from Carla. She says, I'm thankful that colleges had those weird, strict rules back in the early 50s. My parents met because of assigned rotational cafeteria seating at the Manchester College in Indiana. Now, I mean, there was, you were talking about the sense of community when you all came back from dates at the same time and you could talk about what you did on your Friday or Saturday night. I mean, were there other benefits to this? Anybody?
Oh, sure. Friendship is guides everything, and whether it's between a male and a female or the same sex, just having fun and being in college and being free to grow up is really important, no matter what generation you come from.
Let's get back to the phones. 866-780-9100. Did you want to add something?
Okay.
All right, Barbara's on the line in Kelowna. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I went to a nursing school in Rock Island, Illinois in 1956. And we had rules that you had to be in the building, the dorm building, at 8 o'clock. From 8 to 10, you had to be in your room. Or if you got a grade below a C, you had to be in the library from 8 to 10. Then they had room inspection at 10:30, and you had to be in bed with your lights out. But the most abusive was that we had a girl in our class get pregnant, so she was expelled from the school. Mm-hmm. And so then she got married, she had the baby, and her husband died a couple years later. So then she had no education and no way to support herself and that baby. And she was not allowed to come back to school because she had a child and had been married. So that part of the rules was really, really bad.
Yeah, a definite change.
Wow.
Barbara, thank you so much for sharing that. And David, is that something that's covered in all of those books of rules, women not being allowed to continue if they were pregnant? Or is that something that wasn't talked about, wasn't written about?
Yeah, I don't think it was really written about. I don't believe it was codified. It may have been a social convention or a social attitude rather than an official policy, because I haven't really seen anything in written form in any of the conduct codes. But there is always this social convention, whether you have a written law or not, or a written rule or not, that you're still governed by attitude. And that's the last caller, I think, tells a very, very difficult reality of that time. And I just think that's very unfortunate. I must say, though, on a lighter note, when she mentioned that as a punitive measure, as a punishment, you're going to spend 2 hours in the library because your grades aren't up to snuff. I work in a library and I love it.
Doesn't sound so bad. Well, Maggie, you must have seen young women go through some very difficult things when you were director of the residence halls. Do you feel like attitudes changed in your time as far as women who got pregnant when they weren't intending to and their futures?
Well, I don't remember anything that happened when things were very conservative. I do remember later on when a woman would get pregnant or she came to school pregnant. You know, we basically, it would just be by the person. I mean, there wasn't any rule that said you're pregnant, you can't live here. It was like, you can't have this baby in the residence halls because it just isn't set up for that. So sometimes we would just wait and see, you know, when the due date was, and then try and kind of cooperate or move them to our family housing unit is what we did a lot of times. So,
one more call. Peg is on the line in Clemmy. Hi, Peg.
Oh, hello.
Hi, and you were actually at Iowa State University when the dormitories were integrated, right?
Yes.
By gender.
Peg, is that you?
It is me, David. Hello.
Hello. We went to Iowa State together. I recognize that voice. Go ahead, Peg.
Well, a quick comment about something brought up earlier. Yes, it is a bad idea to withhold information from young people because then they can't make good decisions. I saw plenty of that. I was at Iowa State from 73 to 78, getting my bachelor's plus a victory lap, I guess. And the first year I was there was the same year that Iowa made drinking legal at 18, although I still didn't drink for quite a long time. I guess I had too great of a sense of – I was too good at imagining the consequences. My junior year, I was about to move off campus after 2 years in a women's dorm, and instead I joined Spinney House. A couple of dorm houses, I can't recall the names, had already gone co-ed during my sophomore year. I was in a women's dorm over on the west side of campus and was a bit bored with it, to tell you the truth, because by then, because of my extracurricular activities and classes, most of my friends were guys. And my sister, who was a year behind me, said, how about checking out this thing, the spinning house is going co-ed? And, of course, there were, you know, good aspects and bad aspects, but I was in Spinney 2 years and made a lot of friends that I'm still in touch with, and there's a group of the Spinney people who still get together to this day every 4th of July. And it was a great time. I guess my thought about rules and regulations is someone will always figure out a way to get around them no matter what the era.
Well, Peg, thank you so much for sharing with us today. And Sarah, I'm going to let you have the last word because you spent many years teaching high school English. Did you have a succinct bit of advice that you gave to your high school students before they went off to college?
Well, I can't think of one specific thing I gave to everybody. What I can say is that over the years that I taught, I changed too. And a lot of it was from the literature I taught. Lots about women and men in their gender roles that were very stereotyped from those pieces of literature, and then watching the kids change and seeing somebody several years ago be made to go home because she had an inappropriate clothes on.
And
but
times keep
now
changing, don't they? Sarah Richardson, thank you so much. Retired high school English teacher David McCartney and Maggie Van Ol, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.